WBOI Presents In Session is a new series where we'll hear from teachers, educators, and experts on all sorts of topics, sharing their lessons in the WBOI studios. As part of our commitment to lifelong learning, In Session gives us an opportunity to partner with those who have something to teach us. During this episode, we'll hear from Martin Fisher from Science Central on the topic of astronomy. Thank you for listening. Welcome to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. Space, the final frontier. Imagine if we all got as excited about the actual cosmos as we do the latest sci-fi film, or maybe the more correct term might be space opera. But setting the force aside for a moment and focusing on the forces in our universe and beyond it, there's a never-ending list of things to talk about. With that intro, you probably already know who my next guest is, but nonetheless, I am joined by Martin Fisher, Director of Science Central and host of The Weekly Experiment. Martin, welcome.
Hi there, Ben. Thanks, and glad to be here to talk about space.
I'm excited to work with you on exploring our universe with our listeners, but let's start in on what might be a familiar place. Last year, you sat down with Araceli Gomez-Aldana to discuss some of the biggest science stories from 2017. Many of those focused on astronomy. So I have a similar question. What were some of the biggest stories, specifically from the cosmos, that we saw this past year in 2018?
Sure. You know, before we get to that, I'm actually going to back up a moment because I loved your lead-in. I love the movie and science, the science fiction and reality connection. I would almost argue that I do think that not only are movies as popular and as exciting and as grabbing to the general population, but the real stuff, the real science is as well. Every single time it seems like something was announced in the news, or even when you think back historically, a year or so ago, we had that major solar eclipse. Wow, that just grabbed the population. This year, 2019, we're going to have the anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing. People are already talking about it. So I would say that our neighbors, our friends, our teachers, our students, the general population, they are excited by general science and astronomy. So getting back to your original question of what were some of the big things in the world of space in 2018? Wow, I'll tell you, it was absolutely spectacular. Everything from research going on with Mars to an interstellar object with a really cool Hawaiian name, Oumuamua, to unfortunately some of the negatives, such as one of the greatest physicists who has ever lived who passed away, Stephen Hawking. Why don't we go ahead and start off with some of the asteroid research that occurred. And what's interesting about asteroids is that this has been international. The United States has launched a couple of projects going to asteroids. Japan has some spacecraft that have landed and been doing research on asteroids. So yeah, why don't we go ahead and start with some of those launches and some of those landings. I think one of the more spectacular ones was and I'm probably going to mispronounce it, but it was a Japanese spacecraft known as Hayabusa. I'll spell it for you. H-A-Y-A-B-U-S-A. Japan sent the spacecraft to an asteroid known as Ryugu, R-Y-U-G-U. This was an international effort. Japan was the lead, but one of the components, one of the landers, and there were four of them, which were on this particular Japanese spacecraft, Hayabusa, it was a French and German one, which had the name Mascot. They went ahead and landed, they being this spacecraft and this international effort, went ahead and landed on this asteroid. The pictures were phenomenal. I invite everyone who's listening, go home, do a web search, and you'll be able to see everything from as this spacecraft approached Ryugu and as Mascot went ahead and landed. One of the photos, it's really cool. You can actually see the shadow as the lander is heading down towards the asteroid. What's interesting is the design of this one of the landers, this French and German one known as Mascot. It didn't have what a lot of the NASA landers have, which is a wheel system. Instead, it basically hopped from location to location. What's really cool about this particular mission is that the plan is to be able to retrieve some samples and return them to Earth in the year approximately 2020 is what they're shooting for.
This is WBOI Presents In Session. Our guest instructor is Martin Fisher, and this episode is Astronomy Lesson 1.
There are some very cool things that happened in the year 2018. As an example, at the end of 2017 and then going into 2018, there was this weird object that was found on a ground-based telescope in Hawaii. It has a Hawaiian name. I'll spell it first. O-U-M-U-A-M-U-A. Oumuamua. It's this object, rocky in material, oblong in shape. It looks like a cigar, basically. And it is the very first object that scientists have ever found, seen, and are studying, which is interstellar. And by that, I mean it did not come from our solar system. It came from somewhere out there in space, and it passed through our solar system in 2018. That word, Oumuamua, it's a Hawaiian word which means scout. It's not known the exact size of it, but it's roughly anywhere from a couple hundred yards wide to half a mile wide, and maybe up to 2 miles long. As I said, it's rocky, it's cigar-shaped, and it seems to be spinning lengthwise, end over end, as it's been passing through our solar system. And the reason why scientists and astronomers think that is, as they were imaging it, they noticed that it was getting brighter, darker, brighter, darker. That would only happen if it's spinning lengthwise, end over end. It means that it's catching sunlight, then in shadow, catching sunlight, then in shadow. So that's one of the very cool things that happened. Our very first known out of our own solar system, known as interstellar, passing through our neck of the woods. Very exciting. Another famous spacecraft, Voyager 2, has been going in the opposite direction. It has left our portion of the solar system, and it has entered what's known as interstellar space. That's sometimes referred to not only as outside of our solar system, but for Voyager 2, right now it's in that space in between the sun and the sun's effect on our portion of the solar system, meaning planets and solar wind, material streaming out from the sun out into space. Voyager 2 has just passed into this interstellar space. And beyond that would be an area of space known as the Oort cloud, O-O-R-T cloud. So Voyager 2, it's still in our solar system. The next thing would be the Oort cloud. Voyager 2 is going to just continue to go further and further and further until it's no longer affected by the solar wind and no longer affected by the sun's gravity.
We've already had the end of Opportunity's mission on the surface of Mars. What are some other stories from space and other planets that we could see in 2019?
Wow, so I'll tell you, the absolute biggest one, the most spectacular one, the one that has provided so much data that it is still getting analyzed and will continue to get analyzed for years and years, is the retirement of the Kepler Space Telescope. This thing was launched in the year 2009, and it had an amazing 9-year run. It ran out of fuel, but that's okay because so much data came in that is still getting analyzed that we're going to continue to get additional information about exoplanets, other planets. Okay, so think about it. Our solar system, we have the sun in the middle of it, and then our planets and asteroids and the moons of our planets are going around the sun. But there are other stars out there. Remember, stars and suns are the same thing. And NASA, because of the research of the Kepler Space Telescope, analyzed 530,506 stars, other suns out there in space. And it gets even more exciting. As of right now, so far we've had, and I'm double checking my notes because the number is constantly changing. Even when I looked a couple days ago, the number has gone up. Right now, there have been 3,916 other confirmed planets going around other stars, other suns. Just a couple days ago, when I was trying to figure out, what are some of the cool things I want to talk about that occurred in 2018? Just a few days ago, the confirmed number at that point was 3,912. So just in the past few days, from when I started thinking about, what do I want to talk to you about, Ben, to today, the day that we're doing our recording, even more were found as scientists were sifting through the data. However, that's not all. There are another 2,896 candidates, possible items that might be exoplanets. The research that Kepler has been able to find, and even the launch in 2018 of the next satellite that's going to be looking at exoplanets, it's already found more planets. It's possible that of those that were analyzed, roughly 20 to 50% of the stars that were looked at had exoplanets. But look at the numbers. It's possible that there may actually be more planets out in space than there are stars. And it makes sense, even when you think about it, with our own solar system. Our solar system has one sun, but look at all the planets that are going around just that one sun. So if this many planets have already been found going around other stars, it's possible there may be more planets than stars out there in our universe. In 2018, NASA launched the replacement space telescope for the Kepler Space Telescope. It has the nickname TESS. T-E-S-S. NASA, I guess, like the military, loves giving these unique names. TESS stands for Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite. And it's going around Earth. It's looking for other planets. And this particular mission, the TESS mission, is going to analyze approximately 200,000 stars in a different area of space than what Kepler was looking at.
We're all obviously pretty familiar with NASA, though I will admit this is the first time I've heard about some of the efforts that you just mentioned. But what are other countries' space agencies trying to do? I mean, we've already mentioned France, Germany, and Japan. Do we actively partner with them? Do we play well with others?
We do. The space field, it's an amazingly open, communicative field. Think about it. Yeah, these scientists, these astronomers, these physicists, they may work for a university in a particular country. They may work for a government in a particular country, but they are excited, thrilled by basic research. And it turns out that our universe has some pretty spectacular stuff out there. So the same way that the United States government has NASA, yes, Japan has a space agency. Germany has a space agency. Many other countries out there. And there's even a combination such as the European Space Agency, where many of the countries in Europe work together. And to answer your question, do they play nicely? Do they work well? Do they communicate well? Oh yeah, you betcha. We had already talked about the German team and the French team working with the Japanese team to be able to have that project for landing on an asteroid and studying an asteroid. NASA works very closely with other countries. Think about it. We've got an international space station, which is up there in space right now. We have Russian cosmonauts up there. We've had astronauts from other countries, as well as the United States and Russia. When they go up there, they're working together. They're trained beforehand to be able to work on their portion of the mission. Often they're trained in the languages to be able to communicate with their colleagues who are up there. And then once they're up there, yes, they are working together. They have to. Space is a pretty dangerous place. Yeah, it's exciting to be able to do that research, but you don't want disasters to happen. You don't want to put your colleagues or yourself in danger. So everyone has to work closely together, and they share that information while it's happening and once they get back to Earth. What's kind of cool is that there is so much data coming out of these national and international missions that the data is going to be analyzed and looked at for years to come, not just now, but even into the future. I'll give you a perfect example. There was a spacecraft from NASA known as Galileo. It was launched in 1997 to go fly by Jupiter and take a look at Jupiter's moons. Even as recently as 2018, last year, the year in review, what we're discussing right now, data is still being analyzed from this spacecraft from years ago. As an example that I was just telling about, in the year 2018, data came out from looking at one of Jupiter's moons, Europa. They imaged a plume years ago. But in 2018, they were taking a closer look at that imagery, taking a closer look at that plume, and it's thought, not known for sure, because obviously a human hasn't gone there, but it might possibly be water vapor. It may be ionized, which means that those water molecules were subjected to high energy. And they think that this water, potential water vapor plume, is even being disrupted by and impacted by the magnetic field of Jupiter and of Europa. So think about it. Here's a spacecraft from 1997 producing data for many, many years. And it wasn't until 2018 that some of the data was examined a little bit closer. And we're still learning about things from years ago. So all the things that are going on right now with these international missions, whether it's to an asteroid or an international team that's at the International Space Station right now, even as we're recording this, they're producing data that years from now, scientists are going to be looking at it and finding out new stuff.
Another set of organizations that I feel like we hear about are private entities that are trying to reach Mars or put together space missions as well. Are these efforts helpful to this collaboration that we already see between different countries, or are they potentially biting off more than they can chew?
There's always been a close connection between the public and private sectors when it comes to space and space research. Think about those classic missions, Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, Soyuz, the space shuttle, on and on. While it may have been a government entity at that time, for example, NASA, that was the lead, they had to work very closely with private industry to be able to come up with parts or the materials associated with those parts for the mission to be successful. Sometimes those objects even end up in our day-to-day lives. They've got this fun nickname of space spinoffs. But there's no way that one organization, even something as large as the U.S. government, is capable of putting every single piece, part, and component together by themselves. They have to work closely with the private industry. Looking forward into the future, will it be more of a public and private collaboration? Most likely. Think about what's going on right now with SpaceX. SpaceX has proven to be very successful with launches of their large rockets. In fact, NASA has even been hiring SpaceX to bring up into space some of the projects that they're working on. I had mentioned TESS, the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, that was launched on a SpaceX rocket. So yeah, this is going to continue to be a combination. And of course, in the private sector, they're also looking at it as a potential for revenue. It's capitalism. It's revenue generation. Space tourism is a perfect example. SpaceX is looking at launching space tourism into the future.
I want to get back to something you mentioned, the parts and the space spinoffs. How has technology changed in our years of space exploration? Because I know one thing you sometimes hear is there's more technology maybe in your laptop or your phone now than there were on spacecrafts going back to the 60s.
Well, in terms of the level of technology, sure, it's incredibly complex for what we have today compared to what we had back then. Right now, we're looking at digital. Back then, for Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo, it was analog for a lot of the materials, such as communication devices. The amount of power and storage capability that's in the cell phone that I have in my pocket right now, yeah, the storage capacity is much larger than what those early missions were using. It meant, think about it, they had to be really good at their mathematics. They had to be really good at planning those missions with training. They had to be really good at figuring out the appropriate materials for safety. And they had to be really gutsy with what they were doing. You're going into space. Doesn't matter if it was back in the 60s, or if it's in the year 2030, projecting into the future. Space is a dangerous place. So the more technology that we can use for analyzation and safety and for gathering data, the better. And it's a continuous loop. The more information we get, it goes straight into research and technology and materials, which then leads into more research, which then goes back into more technology and materials.
Martin Fisher, thank you so much for being a part of the inaugural run of our WBOI Presents In Session series, and thank you for all you contribute to the station as host of Weekly Experiment and beyond.
My pleasure. I'm excited that I had the chance to share this information with you and with your listeners.
And thank you for listening to WBOI Presents In Session. You can find more episodes of WBOI Presents In Session at WBOI.org. And while you're there, you can find the very latest from the WBOI news team and stay up to date on content we produce year-round. Our theme music is by Noah Campodonico. Our sound effects are by John Dawkins. Thank you for listening.